Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today's interview is with Sarah Prickrell. Sarah made this amazing documentary called Family, a Love Story, and we screened it at Film Invasion Los Angeles in June of 2018. And of course, it took home a grand jury prize for Best Documentary. And this podcast is timed to be released with the release of that film online at Indie Boom Film Festival. So if you go to discoveryindiefilm.com, there's a link to where you can watch Family, a Love Story at this Indie Boom website. Sarah is just a super talented filmmaker. There's a lot to find out about her, so instead of me wasting a lot of time setting this up, let's just talk to her right now.
I was never officially dance trained. I've always loved dancers. I was an actor for a very long time, stage actor with Equity, and I did a lot of stage plays, and then I came out to LA to be a film, TV, actress.
I didn't ask where you grew up.
I grew up in Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great place.
Yes. And then I went to college in Houston at the University of St. Thomas and trained in drama and communications.
I've been to that school.
Oh, you have?
My first film that screened in the mid-90s, it was part of World Fest Houston, and they rented screening space at that college.
Oh, my gosh. Amazing.
Otherwise, I would have never been there.
I was in 95 to 99. I was there, trained in theater and communications. And then I was going to possibly go to grad school for directing, but then I got cast in theater shows in Houston and ended up working for the Alley Theater and was like in their season for, and that's how I became Equity and did some stuff at, you know, the Shakespeare Film Festival and Shakespeare
Festival.
Yeah. Now I'm all like in the film world.
It's hard
I don't
not
think
to put
about
the word film in front of the word festival.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
There are festivals that have nothing to do with film.
Exactly. Yeah. But coming out here, I got a lot of advice of like, well, while you're young, you know, a lot of great roles are in film where a lot of the really gravitas roles for women are women in their middle ages. It's very true. There's kind of the ingenue and then, you know, bit parts as far as like stage plays are concerned.
Yeah.
And so I did come out here, but then I still continued to do Shakespeare and theater and stuff while I was out here. And there's always like a little bit of resistance. What I found that there were many sets that I was on, I was very happy. Like it felt like I was part of a collaboration, which I love. And other sets where I was very, very unhappy. And also because the kinds of scripts that are out there and how we're being represented as women. So I had to come kind of full circle of like, well, what did I love about stage performance was sort of the control of creation. Because once you're on stage, you are expressing, you know, this
completely
character.
Yes.
And when you're on film, you're given some lines and you can bring your performance. But really, an entire film is made in post. It's made in editing, you know. So I quit acting for a little while when I first moved out here and just had some experiences that made me question, like, what this is as a career. And then I was also a photographer and I decided to make that into more of my profession and did everything from shooting people's headshots to, you know, shooting musicians to it kind of segued into me shooting chefs and event photography. I had a wedding photography career for a long time, went into documentary photography, which led to documentary film. And there was something, I feel like each one of these modalities, each one of these things made me more and more specific about the things that I loved about those creations as an artist and the things that I didn't feel quite right to me. And again, with the documentary, depending on your subject, I went to Costa Rica just to help shoot this doc on human trafficking and these poor girls. So the situation of being there, it felt very much like a bit exploitative because they're not asking to share their story necessarily. Like you see something and you might think, oh my gosh, what an awesome story. Or this is so gorgeous to shoot like this woman under this, you know, foggy window and all this stuff. But I thought, what am I trying to capture here? Just so I can say, look at this tragic, cool thing that I was able to capture.
Was that your project or was when you were brought on as a cinematographer?
Yeah, it was one that I was brought on just sort of to shoot and help with. And then I thought, well, if this is something that I am pursuing, that doesn't quite feel in alignment with me. So I thought, well, with narrative, you can create stories based on truth. You can create stories of like real human connection, real human emotion, but you're not feeling like you're exploiting your subject. Not saying that all doc is that way, obviously. No. I mean, my doc that I made for this is about this beautiful story. Yeah. But that was a story that they chose to tell. They wanted to tell and asked me to tell it for them.
Yeah.
So that's something that, so acting, photography,
yeah,
filmmaking, doc, narrative, and then also doing all of this, sort of body work and training. And I felt like the thing I love the most in directing is how present can, what is a safe space that we can create that people can feel the most authentic in within, mm-hmm, which sort of leads itself to all these different types of film that I love to create.
And it sounds like you learned throughout the process that you needed to have more control, more creative control, so that it could, yeah, be the right kind of project.
Yeah. And I feel like everything holds energy, honestly. And you can tell when you're watching a project. I always like to question why. Why is this thing being created? Because so many films I've seen, I thought, whoa, the amount of budget and also hundreds of people between crew and post and actors and casting and everything that are going into a project. And you're going to live with this thing for 5 years, pretty much, from your concept through post, through marketing, possibly selling it, that you have to be pretty passionate about the kind of thing you're trying to put out in the world. And there's so many things that I feel like are put out there that I question, like, why? Why does the, yeah, world need one more torture film?
Right.
You know,
yeah,
like,
not,
why does...
Yeah, not
why,
documentary, but yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and listening to you, I was thinking how a lot of films are made just so that a film's made. Like,
yeah,
this is not
exactly
made for a reason.
Or it can make money.
Yeah.
But, and I feel like with the state of the world right now, I personally feel like it's wildly important to find connection and question, make people question, and also have new perspectives out there, because we honestly have been telling, I don't want to get into like gender stuff, but a male dominated story from the beginning of time in history, literature, and art, like from the very beginning. So it's a white man's story too. I mean, everything from like, you know, cause that's who was able to write. And also not that we weren't able to write, but there's many things throughout history of other documents that were destroyed because they didn't know, want that to be part of history. So I love that now that people are getting more support for more diversity in storytelling, and also people are supporting a female perspective. And I feel you can tell the same story from the exact same story when you're looking at a script. You can give it to 20 directors and they will give you 20 completely separate films with tone, the way they cast it, the way that, you know, jokes land, the way that drama is an art direction. You're going to tell a different perspective. And I'm just more interested in the female gaze right now. I mean, personally, about figuring out what is that.
I agree. And to a large extent, it's almost, for me, as a white male, I just love seeing films from a female perspective because it's a perspective I don't get often enough, you know?
Yeah.
And so we just showed a film that was about sexual awakening during puberty, just the excitement of just seeing the person you have a crush on, not even a kiss, just that excitement of being, you know, just a bump on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And it was told completely from the female point of view. And at the Q&A, I was like, you know, we've seen so many films about, you know,
male puberty,
puberty, you know, and boys, you know, how many first kiss movies were there for boys, you know? And, you know, I was like, you know, thank you. So it was a female director, and she and a guy from her film school co-wrote, but it was wonderful. It was wonderful to get that perspective.
Yeah. I feel now we also just have, I feel like there's an awakening happening right now that it's not just like, oh, gender against gender. It's like we all literally had sort of a status quo of how we identify, you know, and we as females always identified in the context of a man because that's all we've been taught, that we sort of our identity and our experience is always in the context of the male experience.
Very much.
And
yes.
And I myself, I mean, everyone I know, half the people are still not awakened and they're kind of like, what's the big deal? That's just how it is, you know, and other people are being like, oh, but we should question that.
They're threatened at the idea of change, Jim.
Exactly. I mean, even with females, they're like, what? What's the big deal? And now what's so interesting is I had movies that I really, you know, loved and romantic comedies and things like that, that I look back now with new eyes and think, holy crap. I mean, I know there's articles that have been out there just even about like 16 Candles,
and you think
that's like super normal. And it was like in my college experience, it's just sort of like,
yeah,
it's always in context that you think back now and you're like, well, yeah, of course no one thinks twice. Even the girl doesn't think twice. We all have to re-question what we thought was okay and not okay. And that doesn't make, things worse or better. It just needs to start the conversation.
Well, you're being very open-minded to it because, yeah, we watch dated things that are dated,
mm-hmm.
and you're not criticizing it. You're just saying it was a different time, and you're acknowledging the different perspective it's from.
Even if we end up telling the same stories over and over again, but it's from a female perspective, it's going to be different. And mm-hmm. and also, honestly, everyone thinks like, oh gosh, I gotta find my voice. I feel like we've always had our voice, but we've just sort of been programmed to not acknowledge what that even is outside the context. Because there's that whole Bechdel test of can two women be in a room and not talk about a man?
Yes.
You know, but it's just because it's so rare, but it's true. Like we do, I feel like the whole world is about relationships. It's like in context, that's something that's so universal and human. So we should be able to talk about that, but it should be from a true place, not what a guy would want to hear of two women talking about a guy, but what two women really talk about, you know, which I feel like is super rare.
Yeah, actually the Bechdel test you should get an exception if the two women are talking about a man in a real way.
Yeah, in a real way.
Yeah, as exactly. long as it's actually a real conversation between women.
Right.
Yeah.
And then what do you even talk about? I mean, it's like, what? There's like five lines that go back and forth and be like, how's work? Okay, cool, blah, blah, blah. Still, that's in context to what they think a conversation about in this sort
Who's your favorite WNBA player?
You know, yeah. Whatever. Exactly.
It's hard to rule out half the world.
Yeah, exactly. We're all here
together. But it's still a fun test. I like that test.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's a feminist filmmaker, and she's always running that test on films, and she said, oops, I'm 0-3. Like, she's produced 3 films, and she's like, I haven't had one of those scenes yet.
Yeah. I find it all really, once you're sort of aware of everything, I find it wildly interesting, because sometimes things are getting made now even that are like feminist film, but I still don't feel like they're true and authentic to it. It almost feels like it's in reaction to being on the same plane.
Yeah, it's almost
plane.
A stunt in a way.
Well,
sometimes
in the context of you're not breaking out of the mold of the patriarchal storytelling, you're just being like, okay, well, I'm going to do the opposite, versus taking a big step back and being like, what is a unique expression of who I am as a female, which is something I'm currently working on of exploring, of like, what does that even mean? Because we walk through the world in a very different way.
Yeah.
And there's so many stories coming out, like obviously about, you know, Me Too has stirred up a lot of things, but I just feel like, yes, that's a window that we need to start talking about, but there's also so many other things, you know, the way that we can process 50 things at one time.
And you're really addressing that, like, okay, so there was the time that women couldn't tell a story and no one would tell
without
a story. And if the story was told about a woman, it was told from the male perspective by a male writer and a male director.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been we're sort of living through the reaction to it and the freedom to not do it, but people are going against it just to go against it. And then hopefully stage 3 is we're just telling stories.
Right.
And we're not as concerned with gender. We're just, if it's a woman's story, it's told from that perspective. If it's both, it's got both perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you don't have to walk around going, well, I want to make sure people can tell this wasn't made by guys. You know,
you don't need that either.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Or feeling like, I mean, obviously it's pretty rare to have, so far, to have a lot of female directors, at least the Hollywood system, which I feel like it's changed completely over the last decade. But the few that did get to have, you know, studio money, it still was like, oh, I have to approve of all male board of what I'm trying to create. You know, it doctors how you storytell, for sure, you know.
Oh.
Of like what they think is believable or what an audience wants to watch or what is uncomfortable for them because it's outside the norm.
Yes, because that the decision makers, that's the other issue.
Yeah.
Because that even affects Silicon Valley. I know the woman who created the company where people take their expensive handbags and sell them used to each other.
Yeah.
And she took it to all the venture capital companies that were all male run, and they all said, I don't see any money here. And finally, a venture capital company had a female CEO saw the business plan and said, you're going to make a ton of money. We'll back you. And they've made hundreds of millions now.
Yeah.
But the men were like, no, I don't really see a lot of money in used Louis Vuitton bags.
Yeah. They don't, they're just not aware of the market.
They couldn't know.
Exactly.
Just like every year there was a movie set in high school with African American kids. Mm-hmm. They would make a ton of money in the summer, and they're like, oh wow, that's a surprise.
No, exactly. Like, you know, the fact that Wonder Woman came out and Black Panther came out, and people went in droves literally to like tell money people, we want this kind of film being made, where we're seeing things from a different perspective. Like, people cried in the movie theater.
And they really, they just weren't boring. They weren't the same whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it's an exciting time. It's going to be new no matter what.
But I really feel like
it's the wild, wild west. Like, no one can tell you what's going to work, what's not going to work. You just have to be authentic to, back to the full circle, be aware of why you feel passionate about telling a specific story and put it out there.
Definitely. Definitely. I think authenticity is the key. I mean, last year, the films, you know, like Lady Bird and Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
I think both were so authentic, and that's why people enjoyed them, you know?
Yeah.
I thought Call Me By Your Name was one of the first films I saw about a homosexual love story that wasn't a stunt. It was just a love story. Happened to be between two guys, but it was a love story.
And also going through puberty. I mean, they don't really talk about that sort of like transition. And I'm looking forward to, again, just talk about the female perspective.
Yes.
But even when Boyhood came out, you know, I was like, well, where's Girlhood?
Yeah, where's Girlhood?
You know,
yeah.
Because we go through a wild amount of changes and confusion as well.
Way more.
You know, from, you know, all the years, but of course, you know, that's Linklater. I mean, it's from his perspective, and I think it was great that he did that, but I keep waiting for,
it needs to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My reaction to Lady Bird was, oh my God, thank God for this film. Because if this film had come out 10 years earlier, it would have been about the different boys. It would have been about those boys.
Oh yeah. Her in context to
the bass player.
Yeah.
And the kid who's like in the closet, like they would have been the lead characters, just like Superbad, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So wait a minute, we're talking about all this stuff instead of you. so you just basically got involved in the art of film. It sounds like just, you acted for a while, and then really, my assumption is to be more artistically fulfilled, you moved behind the camera.
Yes.
And even to the point of selecting projects, because that was the way to make sure what you were involved in is what was rewarding.
Yes.
Okay.
And also, I've been part of films as an actor that you do contribute you're such a tiny part of the big wheel, and it doesn't matter even what kind of performance you give. It can be edited completely different in post. It's not the story you may be choosing to tell. What's so interesting and fulfilling is to be able to work with a lot of different artists that you're each bringing their thing to the table, and creating something together that you do have a say in. You know, that you...
So what did you direct first? Was it a narrative? Was it a documentary? Was it something else?
Gosh.
When you first,
when I first
directed something?
Yeah, when I first started segueing over, was not even that long ago. I co-directed a couple of things, and then I think I started with Doc. And this thing, the film, Family, a Love Story, had started when I decided I wanted to give back. And I also wanted to segue into video. This was now many years ago. Mm-hmm. And got connected with a friend with Hope and Jesse, and they wanted someone to come shoot their adoption, and I said, okay, I'll
right,
I'll
so you were just being brought in to record a life event for someone.
Exactly.
It wasn't necessarily was a project at that point.
Yeah, that's back when I was, like, doing events and trying to figure out doc, like, what did I like and what did I not like about it, and I thought, well, it doesn't all have to be sort of dark. Here's something that I can give back for, and that's what it was just supposed to be. I was going to come and shoot just a little bit of video footage in the courtroom, and just Hope and Jesse are just so loving and sweet, and Lewis is amazing, and we became friends, and they brought me back to shoot Rose's adoption again. I made them a video for that, and then they were using it in their talks because they also support people who are learning about the foster care system. And it was so sweet. Like, they text me like, oh gosh, they've been using it actually in their programming to give people inspiration, just the adoption videos. And so they kept saying they wanted to festival just the adoption video, but I thought there needs to be more information here. There's just, you know, there's so much that they talk about that needs to be said that it might not stand alone just as like a beautiful clip of them in a courtroom. So they actually wanted to make a whole feature. They had actually talked about that before Lewis's adoption. And I just, knowing that at the time I was also an actor and I also was segueing and doing all these things, if you're going to take on a full-on feature documentary, you have to be there for every moment, you know, that you're living, breathing this thing with them. And at the time, I didn't know much about the foster care system. It'd be one thing if, like, I had a foster child myself and it was my passion and I'm going to be there for every step of the way, but to ask a team of people, because you also have to get sound and all that stuff, to be there for every single moment is really a huge commitment. And this wasn't anything that was funded. It was just sort of them wanting to share their story.
Yeah, exactly. To make the feature, you would really have to go the fundraising route and apply for grants and everything so you could put together the team to accomplish it.
Well, even then, it's practically like you're having to, like, live with someone for, you know, who knows how long.
And you probably would have to hire research people and find some other adoptive couples and right. some other foster
And they have quite a few. Yeah. I mean, they know so many people, but that was something that I personally couldn't commit to.
Right, right. And because you'd shot the other things for them, you pitched to them or you said to them, I can make you a great short, just let me record you at home and record you playing with the kids and I can.
Yeah. I just felt like they're,
do it.
Yeah. I felt like they just needed to be, I was like, look, if you want to festival and share your story more, then it just needs a little bit more information. So I said, let's start with an interview and then maybe we can piece together something for a festival. And so, yeah, they're just so charming and great. And they know so much information about the system that we sat down and did some interviews and, you know, so much time had passed from the original adoptions to where the kids are a little older. So we shot a little footage around the house. And then I went about, it was actually really great. It was the first doc I had edited myself and I had to look at it in a whole other way. Cause when you're doing scripted, you take the script, you edit something. And even then I hadn't edited, I have an online magazine, Sirens and Scoundrels. We put together these little videos and you're talking about 30 seconds, a minute with very limited audio. So it actually forced me to have to learn as a filmmaker of like, where's the story here? You know, it's not in the script. And then when you're working with scripted, you have a script, you edit it to the script. And then you also see like, what did I actually get in the can? What's working? And you modify from there. This is literally just hours of talking, you know, with a bunch of B-roll. And so I got a really great note from a friend who said when he edits, cause he was a professional editor, he said, you're so visual, you can't stop seeing the visuals. Like, close your eyes and literally just listen to the audio and see what's happening there. And so that's what I had to do. I closed my eyes and I listened to just the audio and I took notes of like, oh, that's a beautiful moment. Or, oh, that information is really important. And then I had to actually edit the audio together first and then see if I had enough B-roll to fill out the piece. And it actually, I had to learn how to edit audio together, which I had never done before just because we had no budget at all. And I feel like audio is wildly, difficult, challenging. There's a lot to learn there. And, because I'm such a visual learner and a visual person, I felt like I usually can cut a video together now, years later.
I mean, you started off with photography, so you're purely visual in the beginning.
So the auditory stuff was very.
But that
very
is where the story is, as well as visual. Yeah. I'm just curious. I want to jump in. So, because it's such a perfectly made documentary, it's such a beautiful documentary with all the way all the pieces work together. And it sounds like, so you first had the adoption pieces, mm-hmm. and then you shot the interview, and then you did B-roll, and then you did, so it wasn't that you said, I need these seven things to put together. You actually just found them along the way or kept adding to it?
Yeah. So Yes. So the adoptions were a few years apart, and they, you know, so this has been going on for quite some time.
Yeah,
so by the time we did the interviews, I just walked around their house getting B-roll, you know, in between the kids waking up from naps and things like that. And then while they were down, we were trying to get the interview while the house was quiet. And so I had all that in the can. Once we got notes after I had something edited together, we got some notes about something's getting confusing because we talk about each child individually, but all I had was footage of the two kids together. So then I knew I needed a little bit of extra B-roll, which is hard to create necessarily. So then we shot like a tiny bit of some filler, but I feel like if the doc was even longer, then I would have done some art-directed sort of shoots. But I don't know if they would have made sense because the kids are so much older now, you know, that to fit in just even when we did the interviews, it was years ago. So this thing has been created over time, and it has been a very much of like, well, what's working and how can we solve the next step for them?
So that's why it's just so amazingly good
because
you took the time. Well, I mean, really to watch it, it's on par. I mean, I'm tempted to say it's better, but I mean, it's on par with the best documentaries you see, you know, from these massive professional production companies that end up on HBO, you know, I mean, it's of that caliber. So it's so interesting that it happened, to go back to the previous word, because it's authentic, because you,
Well, me as a storyteller, I'm always drawn to human authenticity. And I thought, well, where's the story here? There's a lot of info. And if you're making sort of an infomercial for the foster care system or informational video, you still want to keep people engaged. If you're watching 20 minutes of facts, what's the real story here? And I felt like the real story, I feel like you can connect to anyone, whether they don't even like kids or want children. I feel like people can still watch it because you can see how much Hope and Jesse wanted this and how much they love each other and what a struggle it was for them to get their kids. I feel universally, that's where the story was, which I think Hope and Jesse did appreciate that once it was all together, that if people did want more information, they could go look it up online. But the story was really a story of them as a family.
Yeah. And how that's why you got the perfect title for it, is Family, a Love Story. But yeah, because I rewatched it this morning how soon in the process did you realize that this isn't as much about foster care or adoption as it is about how one way a family is created?
I feel like they were so emotional that first adoption day, so emotional because it had been such an ordeal to adopt Lewis that everyone, even the judge in the room, was crying. Like Jesse couldn't even get his words out. And that's what touched my heart from the very beginning, that just how badly they wanted this and how much they love each other and also how funny they are together. And I thought, they're so charismatic. You have to start with getting the audience to be on this journey with them. You have to get, you know, introduce them to the audience in a way where they're like, oh, okay, we really like this little like cast of characters and we want to see like what is happening with them.
And at that point, when you shot that adoption, when they first, the first moment they really, he became their child.
Yeah.
Did you know about their backstory with the previous Foster, that they had the mother taken back? Because that makes it so impactful.
Yeah. When I showed up to do the adoption, that was the first time I met them in person. We talked a little on the phone about why they wanted someone there, but I hadn't met them in person except that day, but we had a mutual friend that was like, oh my gosh, you're going to love Hope and Jesse. And, you can't help but fall in love with them and their story from experiencing them in such a heightened day.
And you kind of, that's another reason probably why it's so good, is you got to know them through this project just as the audience does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can tell. I mean, these moments of connection are always, whether I was doing photography or I'm doing filmmaking, like I love actually to watch things with the sound off and watch characters or, you know, footage in general and be like, oh, where's the human connection here? Like, where can you see something processing or something going on, chemistry between people before you even add in any words? And that's just the way I work. I know a lot of people work with words first and then add in things, but I am always drawn to that. Those moments of stillness and connection when I'm looking at footage.
So in the end, how long were you working on this?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, well, you didn't, but you didn't know, like, at that first recording of the adoption, you didn't know you were making a documentary yet. You were just doing a favor for some people.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then the second adoption, you're just doing a favor.
Exactly.
So it was when they came to you and said, we think we got a feature documentary here.
Well, no, they brought that up from the first adoption.
Oh,
and,
really?
And I said, you know, why don't we just, let me just record the adoption and then we'll talk. And I had told them that that wasn't really, because there was no funding. And to do that, you have to, you know, that's full time, beyond full time, to create something like that, that I thought that they should do it because they're living their lives. But then once, the more we became a collaboration, they definitely wanted me to keep helming the perspective
I would
and the story.
Say it probably kept it much healthier to have you, have them not produce it, or they are producers, but to have them not be the executives of this thing.
Yeah. Well, I also feel like it's hard. That's why they always say, which is so funny, just out of necessity, I've had to edit my own projects, but that's what they always say, is that the editor should not be the producer or the director. You're just too close to it. And it's hard to see the story. It's hard to have an objective view of, like, this is what I have in the can and this is what it needs to be, like, without having some, like, an outside eye take a look at it, you know? So the fact that this thing took some time and I was able to just see, hopefully show the audience what I saw of them, it's a beautiful reflection of allowing them to feel seen. But when you're living it day in and day out, you can't have that perspective. You can't. It's interesting because when I've worked with other sort of clients with, like, branding and things like that, I feel like that's sort of a predominant conversation that comes up about allowing someone to, like, if someone's happy with what I've given them back, that is actually a statement that gets said a lot, is like, they feel seen, but in a new way that they didn't even see themselves. And I love to hold that space for people.
Yeah. And Hope and Jesse are both performers.
Yes.
It's admirable, I think, that they don't come across as performers.
Yeah.
You showed their sincere home side. They are not wearing the mask because they're comedians, right?
Yeah.
So the comedian mask is never worn by either.
Yeah.
At all. It's their sincerest moments. And I'm sure, I'm being biased now, but you put two stand-up comedians on camera and how does it not get sticky? I mean, absolutely.
It's the fact that it's so real to them. They're so passionate about what they do and the information that they want to share.
Yeah, and the canceling other
people. That's the way that I see them. Like, I see the funny and I see, like, how their friend group, their community is so funny and warm and shows up for each other. And it's so beautiful to see. And that's true. I guess a lot of other people only see the context of them, of, like, making jokes and all that kind of stuff. But,
well, Lord knows a lot of filmmakers would have gone to show that side too, just for entertainment value and whatnot, but it wouldn't have belonged.
No.
And I guess when I said I was biased, I was just thinking, you know, had they just done it on their own, how were they going to resist doing some bits, you know? I mean, when you're a performer.
Yeah, especially with Doc, and you're talking about real life. It's true. In this current project that I'm working on, which is more of an art installation, it's like a video art installation, visual poetry, some stuff that I've been experimenting actually on myself, which feels very vulnerable. Not that that footage maybe will be seen, I don't know. But it was more about me trying to discover some things I needed to figure out in order to translate it to collaborators so that people know what I'm trying to accomplish. And I found that really difficult, that to be behind camera and in front of camera, because once you get in front of camera, so self-aware of, okay, what does this even look like? What am I doing? What am I trying to express or translate? Yeah. You just get into your head a little bit, and it's nice to sort of just hold a space where people can be themselves and authentically tell their story and not have to worry about, like, how is this coming across?
Yeah, and it's not vanity. It's even about the technical aspects of how is this being captured. Yeah, you have a completely different hat on when you're behind that camera. Yeah. When you step in front, you sort of, maybe won't use that because it definitely is. It is something when people step in front of the camera and all of a sudden, their mind is behind it, and then they're just kind of. But anyway.
Well, I found that even doing photography. I mean, it's very difficult. Like people, that's why I myself hated taking headshots because it's very different for someone to get a candid of you, or you're playing a character or this, but you're staring straight into camera and you're saying, this is me.
Yeah.
And so many agents want you to have
hire me.
Have all the different versions of you, the heightened versions of you. And it's very, so cool. I think back when I was doing event photography, because it felt more like Doc of you don't need to do anything. You just be however you're being. You know, and I'm going to be here and hopefully capture something that feels authentic to you.
Right. Let the camera disappear so that
they
can be themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think is a beautiful thing if you can pull it off. Yeah.
Well, so we've walked away from family love story again a bit.
Yeah.
But so you wrapped it up and you got it where you wanted it.
Yeah, with Jesse and...
17 minutes, and were they super... How overjoyed were they when you first showed them your...
They were really happy. They felt like they were authentically captured, at least with what they translated to me, and they felt like, you know, it could help a lot of people by sharing information, but also, you know... It was more for me, my motivation was not only to share information, but to inspire people. You know, I want people to feel something. And then they said that they just loved it. They felt like people could feel what they were going through, and it translated their story in a succinct way.
Very inspiring. And in a world where good news is not something we see all the time, to watch a documentary like that I think I introduced your film at the film festival as here are documentaries that aren't going to make you feel bad. You know, I mean, because it's you know, we need to know the bad things in the world too.
Yeah.
But it certainly is wonderful to have someone show us something beautiful in the world.
Yeah.
You know,
and I felt like it was also important to balance that too, because as a storyteller, especially with Doc, you're choosing, well, even with narrative, you're choosing the story that's being told, that I felt like also I just didn't want to be like, and now there's such a beautiful, happy family. There were a lot of real facts and difficulties in this process of you are going to foster to adopt, which I learned a lot of information about through the course of making this doc with them that they shared with me. And it was great to, I feel, and I felt like made the story more compelling to be able to show all sides of it. It's like, yes, there's this and there's this, so that if you are inspired to go and do this, that you're not going in completely blindly. That's like, oh, I'm going to be just happy with all these kids. Like it is a choice, and there's a lot of information to share there.
And in spite of my boosting the happiness of it, you also learn, I mean, it's subtle, but you learn about this child surrender thing. I forget the term, something surrender.
Yeah. Safe surrender. Yeah.
Safe surrender. And you know, we live in a world where there are young women in a position where they're surrendering, doing a safe surrender of a child.
Yeah.
That's a world that I'm not aware of.
As aware of as
I probably need to be.
You know? So many stories to be told there as well.
Yeah, that's the sad documentary.
Yeah, there's so many things to
that's not the one that you walk out of going, oh man, the world's full of great people.
Yeah. I mean, well, everyone's just trying to, I think, doing the best they can. Human interactions are just complicated. We're complicated.
We got a hamster in the next room, and we're just on the wheel. We're just running on the wheel, you know. We're just running on the wheel. We think it's a big important thing we're doing, but we're just, you know.
Yeah.
But so after Family Love Story, how many? Because I think we premiered it at Film Invasion LA. I think it might have been your premiere.
Yes.
So
and then I think they had screened it at Highland Park, and I know they're still seeking out to see.
I was going to say, did they travel much? Did they go far and wide with it?
No, just because it's just us. It's just me and Jesse and Hope, and they've got the kids at home. And so we were thinking.
They're not going to fly to New York. Yeah.
So we were trying to stay as local as possible for them. Also, it is about foster care in general, but especially the LA system. So they were hoping that it would just bring more education, you know. We were at the Underground International Film Festival. So we've had a few screenings and they were waiting to hear back from some more, but they were trying to do as many local as possible so that they could still, you know, stay with the kids. And,
right. But again, yeah. It's a different kind of project. I'm so used to people just saying, I've made my film and now I want to get it all over the country, but yeah. Very, very different experience.
Yeah. Well, in an ideal world, it would be just used for inspiration or education. Like, we would love to get it just distributed somewhere and that the most amount of people could see it versus these film festivals. It's difficult on a Wednesday night, you know, you invite 100 people and maybe 5 show up, you know, just because of everyone's so busy that it would be really lovely to have it, in a platform somewhere where it could be shared with the most amount of people would be the long-term goal for it, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. So since that experience, it sounds like you're always doing something.
Yes. We were closing up a narrative film, a short film about a female perspective.
And then you directing?
Yes, I directed this actually a little over a year ago. Again, post-production is with no funding. It takes a little bit of time, but that turned out really beautifully. And we had festivaled it a bit, and I think it was running a bit too long for programming. So we went and got some perspective and some notes, and we re-edited it to almost half of the length for the story that needs to be told. And it's just about codependent relationships and the choices that we make as women. It's a narrative, it's a drama, and, we're much happier with the new cut. That's Lily. It did win fiscal sponsorship with the Chimera Project. It supports women in film. So we're just kind of closing that up. And then, that's been a lot of post-production in the last year, but recently, as far as things that I've been creating and exploring, I have been exploring dance film. So I created a several but one that premiered up in Vancouver is based on the 1948 painting Christina's World. It's an Andrew Wyeth painting, who was a magical realism artist back in the 40s. It's a woman in a field, and I always felt like it's so narrative, and the more I researched it, it's actually based on a real life woman that he painted, and she had CMT, which was a degenerative nerve and muscular disorder called Charcot-Marie tooth disorder. And, I thought, God, that's much better than anything I could make up. Real life is always more compelling. So I created this dance film about, someone having body awareness and body appreciation. Cause I feel like when we all have health issues, we have just a newfound awareness and presence with our own body and appreciation. So I felt like that's a pretty universal story, and I wanted to reference the film. So we shot it to replicate, to allude to that she was the woman in the painting. So that got into, both the Cascadia Dance and Cinema Festival and the, DC one as well. And, which is a beautiful festival too. And then the Hereditary Neuropathy Foundation actually ended up sharing it to raise more awareness for them. So it's really funny how these little projects sort of pop up and then they want to go live off and do their own thing.
So a lot of young people ask, how do I become a filmmaker? And Sarah has a great answer. Study acting, study photography, get your feet wet in filmmaking, slide into cinematography, and then move from cinematography into directing. Easy, right?
But really all I'm trying to say is there's no doubt why she's such a talented filmmaker, because her history pretty much sets her up ideally to make great films. And I'm really looking forward to what Sarah does next. But before you think about what she does next, have you watched the film? Go to discoverindiefilm.com, and the post for this podcast will have a link to Family, A Love Story. I mean, not only will you love watching that film, but it'll make you want to start fostering kids. And I'll repeat, that's discoverindiefilm.com. And if you're a social media kind of person, @DIFWINS is the home for Discover Indie Film on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And you know what else you can learn about at discoverindiefilm.com? Well, the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, it's every November. Film Invasion Los Angeles, it's every June. And if I sound kind of funny in this intro and outro, there's a reason. There's an 11-year-old asleep like two rooms away while I record this, and I cannot prevent my brain from adding a little bit of a whisper to this. So, whatever, I sound funny this time. Thanks for listening.